Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. I'm kind of surprised that on Sunday evening, somebody coming. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Special thanks to Dori for having the idea of setting it up, saying, Lama Nigara, why is it only for men this series? And you're right. It should be indeed. What? Sorry? Who? No. Today's ladies only. And yeah, today's only ladies. Wednesdays are only for men. Oh, and the Rebbe is here. Shalit. Good evening. Which one?
The third one.
Don't worry. We'll do all of them over here sometime. We'll find Sundays. Yeah, we'll find you. We'll find the right time and day, and we'll be fine.
You're doing the same for the men and the women.
Yeah. Yes, you are. Yeah. Exactly. It's the exact same thing. I am repeating myself. Okay, so, good evening. I was actually planning to have this year. Yes. Good evening. I was actually planning to have this year inside, but Maariv is starting tonight at 9:15, so I said we'll take our time and we'll have a longer year, around an hour over here. And I want to discuss a very, very sad case, a very, very tragic case that happened in Israel the past few months. This started around the September time a few months ago. I brought here the headlines from the newspaper in Israel, and it's a terrible, terrible story. Isha hara she'avra hafraya chutz gufit gilta ki ha'ubar she'berachma lo to'em la genetit. A terrible, terrible case that lo aleinu, a certain family had to go to a fertilization clinic in Asuta, in Ashdod, and they had to have special treatments in order to get pregnant, and they did what's called IVF, in vitro fertilization, meaning that the husband and wife couldn't bring children in a natural way by themselves, so they had to go to this clinic, they took the egg from the wife, they took the sperm from the husband, and did the fertilization in a lab. And instead of putting the rightful egg in the rightful mother, Rachmana Litzlan, they put it in somebody else, in some other lady. And then they found out about this very late in the third trimester. And then the newspaper started discussing, the media really mamish enjoyed this story, and called it the modern Mishpat Shlomo. Mishpat Shlomo HaModelni, the modern Shlomo HaMelech trial, the famous story, two women come together saying, this is my child, this is what happened. And it was a family that claimed that for some reason they thought they were the rightful owners of the egg, and this came to court, and they took tests, and it turned out she's not the biological mother, meaning the woman that they thought that she was the biological mother, the owner of the egg, it turned out that it wasn't her. So now we have this lady that she was pregnant with a child that biologically is not hers, and we don't know who is the rightful mother. So let's say we would find out who is the real biological mother. Now, who gets custody of this child? As I said, the modern Mishpat Shlomo, a terrible, terrible story. In the meantime, she gave birth, Mishpat Mutzlacha, 2 weeks ago, to a baby girl. Her name is Sophia. And they're still now trying to track and find the biological mother, and also then to determine who is going to raise this child. And this is a very, very terrible story. For 9 months, she's sure that she's carrying her child after many years of treatments. And then she finds out it's not actually her child. The question is, whose child is it? Who is the mother of Sophia? Is it the mother, who the surrogate mother, that carried the baby for 9 months, the embryo for 9 months inside her? Or is it the biological mother, the mother who actually gave in the DNA component, the owner of the egg, who is the mother? This thing actually happened also in the past. It happened also in 2017. This is the second headline in the source sheet, which is in front of you, that in the hospital called Brazilai in Ashkelon. So again, by accident, they put in the wrong egg in the wrong mother. However, they found out very quickly, and they said that they're going from now on to be extra careful that these things won't happen again. A similar case, but actually it's not similar at all, happened first at 1987. And back in the day, also they call this story the modern Mishpat Shlomo. This was a different type of surrogacy. I brought here from Wikipedia that there are two types of surrogate motherhood. There is the second one, which is a more common one. It's called the gestational surrogacy. I hope I'm reading this correctly. The gestational surrogacy. That means that the mother is giving the egg and the father is giving the sperm, and then they're giving to a third woman, the third person, to carry this fertilized egg. And that's the most common type of surrogacy that there is. But there is a first kind of surrogacy which is called traditional surrogacy, although it's not traditional at all because it's illegal in Israel and I think in also many places around the world, that the surrogate mother is not only carrying the child, but also it's her egg. Meaning that the husband, Reuven and Leah, are married. The husband is giving his sperm to Rachel. And Rachel, with her egg, she's also carrying the baby. And that's what's called the traditional surrogacy. And she is both the owner of the egg and also the one carrying the child. That's called traditional surrogacy. In Israel, this is illegal. So back in 1987, there was a couple. Again, Lo Aleinu didn't have the ability to bring children in a natural way. So there was this lady that was the surrogate mother. And this was traditional surrogacy, meaning that it was her egg and the husband gave the sperm. And she got pregnant. And they had an agreement, a signed agreement, that after 9 months, so she is going to hand the baby to this couple.
And the first one, you said it wasn't legal?
This kind is not legal. Which meaning giving a sperm to a woman, and she will carry the baby for a couple. Why? That's not legal, because it's more, I guess, it's more of a I don't know how to say it. Sachar
be'guf. She's lending her womb.
She's lending more than her womb. She's also lending her egg. She's giving actually her genetics to this as well.
Was she married?
And that lady, I don't think she was married, but she had other children as well back in 1987. So she had this agreement, and she signed. She's willing to give the child after 10 months. They paid her $10,000. I don't know. 1987, was that a lot? I guess lots of money. Okay. And after 9 months, she said, I'm not giving over the baby. I'm not giving over the baby. I carried him. This is my egg. I'm not willing to give over this baby. And this went to court. And the court ruled that who's going to keep the baby? Sorry? No, the parents. The other parents. Not the mother, who was the owner of the egg. And also, because of the agreement. Because of the agreement, they said, listen, an agreement is an agreement. And that was the ruling in court in 1987. But back to our case, again, I want to discuss this thing. It's a big, big story now in Israel. Maybe now it's less of a story because of the elections. But it's a big, big story now in Israel. That again, by accident, they put the wrong fertilized egg into a different mother. And she says, I'm supposed to keep the child. Whereas, if let's say we'll find out who is the real owner of the egg, who should keep it? The owner of the egg or the surrogate mother? So what do you think? Without seeing any halachic sources.
There was no agreement
about
that, right?
No agreement. But again, this is the genetics of Rachel. Who? Which one?
The real mother.
The real mother.
She gave it to an egg. She was also donating an egg, and they didn't
have. No one donated an egg. Sorry. What? No. But the question is: let's say we know very clearly who the mother is. Let's say we find out who is the real mother, right? Sorry. That's
the intended mother who wants to keep her, like, it was her egg, it's her baby.
It's her baby? And not the mother who carried.
That's the answer, because otherwise that's not
me. Well, what? No, the answer is that there is no answer. We'll see why.
I think that the lady who's carrying the baby, it's not her fault that they changed the person. They changed it on her. She is carrying the baby, and she knows that that's her baby. And I think that baby has to be her baby.
Okay, so we have here a major machlokas.
What we're talking about is that the legal way, not this.
Yeah, a legal way.
No,
sorry.
This situation I understand, but what's considered legal is when it's a surrogate with someone else's
egg. And sperm, yeah.
Fertilized.
Yeah. Fertilized egg. That's, that we'll discuss why is that. hospital has it.
Just because the hospital make the bill full there.
I agree, but the, yeah, the owner of the egg is the same thing exactly. Yeah, but let's say, but she got an egg, which is one cell, I think, and then she multiplied this cell millions, billions, trillions of times.
Medical attention of that, because human beings need donate a kidney or whatever, they're not going to go to the parents who have her and raise her because they can't help her. They're going to find the parents who she belongs to because they share genetic material, and they could donate an organ or donate, like, they have that.
I agree that they'll try to find someone who's close genetically, but still, we have to say that there isn't going to value the person that for 9 months carried this baby, and she got an egg, then out came her baby. Sabrina, yeah?
It's
totally different, because a child a child was the egg of the mother. The child was inside the mother for 9 months and then came out. That's 100% the mother. My question is, if you have one owner of the egg and one the surrogate mother, who is the owner? Owner of the egg. Owner of the egg, okay.
My question is, how long did she carry that baby?
9 months.
The 9 months.
9 months, yeah. Only in the last trimester. Yes, Dora, what do you think?
I think that in Judaism, we go by the mother, and that's how we know they're Jewish.
Uh-huh.
So the surrogacy, so if the egg...
Who said? Wait. Dory here is saying something very interesting. She says that according to Judaism, so we always go according to the mother. If the mother is Jewish, the baby is Jewish. If the mother is not a non-Jew,
so this
question is also a question in the laws of Gerus.
Right.
Let's say the surrogate mother is a non-Jew, and the owner of the egg is Jewish. Does this child have to have a conversion, or the opposite?
If it has to be from the mother. The mother that's carrying the baby has to be Jewish in order for
the mother who's carrying the baby, or the owner,
the surrogate.
So in that case, the surrogate is the mother, according to
yes. And if you sign a document, then you'll hand it back over.
We have the documents now. Documents is a separate issue.
But the egg is not Jewish.
Not Jew. Let's say it's not Jew.
That's the question. What is important here? Is it the egg who's important? Or is it the surrogate mother who's important?
Is the person...
I don't think it's just a house. I mean, an egg came inside. A child came outside. Whereas... Sorry? That's the question. Okay, yep. But she, also the owner of the egg has to say, listen, she multiplied this egg into a child.
She didn't.
I'm saying multiply because she entered a cell, and then it miraculously, an amazing job. Yeah.
But what if they found out, like, I was like 10 years old.
Yeah. I don't know. Could be. No. Halachically, I'll tell you what, legally, it'll be very sad, but halakhically there won't be any difference. There won't be any difference. Because again, we want to know what kind of child was born. Okay, so this is a very, very fascinating question. And I'm already telling you in advance that there is no clear answer. The chief rabbi of Israel did give a clear answer. And he said who's going to keep the baby and who's going to have custody of the baby. However, it's not simple at all, even according to the chief rabbi. But since these things... we're not in the time of the Torah, obviously. And it wasn't the time of the Gemara, in the time of Shulchan Aruch. So we don't have a way to determine who is the mother. However, our poskim, and I think with amazing cleverness, managed to find all kind of ideas that are in the Gemara, in the Shas, and maybe even in Tanakh, that might give us an answer. So it's very, very interesting. Before I go into to all kind of the proofs, I want to hear what you have to say just for a second.
The question, the woman, the surrogate mother, that they do not know who the mother of the baby is.
Currently, they don't know who the mother, who the owner of the egg is. They thought it was some woman, and then they did a test, it wasn't her. I think they have like 20... No, so currently there is no Shaila. The thing is, I think in that clinic they had like 20 families going through treatments, so it has to be one of those 20 families. So they are going to trace it. I mean, and they want to trace it. Sorry? So I think they are. I don't know what... I mean, the story's not over yet. This story's not over yet. Sorry? Of course, yeah. They have to do the test in order to figure this thing out. Okay, my wife is telling me here, what she's saying, that many, many couples were indeed invited to come and take tests to make sure that, to find out whether it's them or not.
They were tested, if it's there.
They're going to close it, by the way. I think they're closing it for a while, at least. No, they have a few hospitals. There's in Barzilai, there's a Suta, there's many places. And it's okay that they close it. Yeah, I think you're right. Wow. Wow. Really? Is that an OHIP? Interesting. Okay. Okay. Okay, so let's see the sources that our rabbis used in order to try to answer this question. Now, I'm saying in advance, this is kind of advanced material. This is material that the young in Eretz Yisrael have tried to prove from. So I'll try to explain it as much as possible. It wasn't easy to explain it to the men as well. So don't think you're indifferent. So let's try to go through this. So they find very, very original and interesting ways to answer this question. So in source number one, there is a Gemara in Masechet Megillah that learns from the story of Esther. If you'll see in the footnote number one, there is a pasuk in Megillat Esther that tells us about the family of Esther. And the pasuk goes as follows, that Mordechai, v'hi omen et Hadassah, he took care of her, he was her foster family, he Esther bat dodo, ki ein la'av ve'em, the Megillah tells us that she didn't have any father or mother, and then the Megillah carries on and says, she was good looking. The pasuk tells us twice that her parents died, and twice the Megillah tells us that Mordechai raised her. So the Gemara in source number one asks, why does the Megillah have to tell us twice that she was an orphan and she had no parents? It's written both ki ein la'av ve'em, and also uvemot avia ve'ima. Why was this important to tell us twice that she didn't have any parents? So the Gemara answers and says, Amar Rav Acha ibarta metavia yelada metaima. The story was that when her mother was pregnant, immediately when she was pregnant, her father passed away, and immediately when her mother gave birth, so her mother died. So she didn't. So Rashi tells us on the spot. The Megillah tells us twice she didn't have any mother or father, in order to emphasize she never had a mother or father. It's not that she had parents and then sometime they died. She never had a mother and father. That's what the Gemara wants to tell us, that once her mother was pregnant, her father died, and once her mother gave birth, she died, the mother died. Okay? And Rashi says the following words in source number two. B'sha'ashi nit'abra ima metavia. Says Rashi, "Nimtza shelo haya la av mishaashinir'e liikarot av." She didn't have a father from the time that usually people are called fathers. So, meaning the moment that her mother became pregnant, her father died. She never had a father during the time that people are called fathers. When are people called fathers? At the moment the mother becomes pregnant. And says Rashi, "Ukshiyaladata ima meta." So the Achronim, in source number three, the Beit Autzar, Yosef Engel, they learn from the words of Rashi. Let's listen to the words of Rashi. Rashi says, she never had a father when usually men are called fathers. When are they called fathers? The moment the mother is pregnant. And she never had a mother. From the moment that a mother is called a mother, when is a mother called a mother, says Rashi? When she gives birth. When she gives birth. We see that men are called fathers from the moment the wife is pregnant, Why? Because they're already out of the picture. They gave the sperm and that's it. They're done. They're not part of the process at all. They're finished. So from that moment that the woman is pregnant, then the father is called a father. From the moment of the inception, that's the rule? Yes. But the mother is called a mother, says Rashi, when? Only when the child comes out to the world. So in that case, the poskim wanted to learn from here that we see that a mother is a mother only from the time she gives birth. We see from here that who is the mother? Who is the mother? The surrogate mother. What? What? Yeah. The fact that Rashi wants to emphasize, when is a mother a mother? Only when she gives birth. Why didn't he say beforehand? It has to be that she's not a mother at that point. The reason is, the logic behind it, says Rabbi Yosef Engel in source number 3, there is a halachic concept called Ubar Yerech Imo, that the embryo is like a limb of the body of the mother. The mother has hands, legs, she has also another limb called the embryo. The embryo is part of the mother. When does the embryo become an embryo, an independent human being? Only when she gives birth. So only when she gives birth, this baby, this embryo becomes an independent human being. So at this point, the mother becomes a mother. So they wanted to learn from here. I think this is a very, very original way of understanding. They want to learn from here. You see from here that the real mother is the surrogate mother. Because Rashi says, when is a mother called a mother? When she gives birth. Beforehand, in inception, only the father is a father. But the mother is a mother only when she gives birth.
And that's not fair.
And that's not fair. I hear. Listen. Listen. Page number 2 is going to give us reasons to believe that the surrogate mother is the mother. Page number 3 is going to be the opposite. Why the owner of the egg is the mother.
Mordechai was told that he was her uncle. How was he her uncle?
I don't know. He was the brother of either her mother or father. I don't know. Father or was it? Yeah, he is. He is. Okay. Okay, so this is one way of proving that who's the mother? The surrogate mother. Because Rashi says regarding Esther, when is a mother a mother? She's a mother when she gives birth. Why? Because until then, ubar yerech imo. This is a hand. She gives birth. They have an independent child.
That source says that how do we understand becoming a mother? That like when the baby's inside of you, it's so beautiful, it's part of you, you're one entity, and when the baby's born, now you're just...
So that shows that a surrogate mother is very important.
That's just the terminology.
So we see from here that in the halachic point of view, the mother... Okay, fake is not convinced, this is recorded, no problem, but we'll see. Okay, so this is one way of understanding. Is this clear? This is clear, right? Can we move on? Let's see. Should we just tell me when I'm clear, when I'm not clear? Okay, this is actually, yeah.
I know there's like not a lot of material to go on, but is this a normal way of learning a halachic status?
So that's a terrific question. It's a terrific question. So I'll tell you what, however, since we don't have any Gemaras that have the halachas of Empud de Ka'it, surrogate mother, we don't have these things, suppose you have to find original ways. Where do we have any illusions in Gemara, in halacha, that could teach us these things? So we have no choice.
Okay, but we do have a choice. Like, I don't know.
Sorry?
Just because this seems like, when Rashi's saying this, like, I wouldn't put it so... The mother can't die after conception because of the no kid.
Yeah, but Rashi had to say for some reason that she was never considered a mother. She was never considered... Rashi could just say she never had a mother. Rashi can say that. Rashi said she never had a mother that is Nir'el Kotev. She is entitled for the name of a mother. Okay, that is proof number 1. 1-0 to the mother of Sophia that is now having the baby. Okay, proof number 2. This is a bit more complicated, so let's try to understand this. In halacha, there are sometimes halachas that concern brothers from the same father, and some halachos concern brothers from the same mother. For instance, I cannot marry the wife of my brother from the same father, because my parents are still together, but yeah, but, and I also can't marry the wife of the brother from my mother. But the parsha of Yibum and Chalitza, can you explain what Yibum and Chalitza is? Do we need to explain what this is? Just a short summary. If La'aleinu, Reuven, and his wife are married, and Reuven dies without any children, so his brother will have to have a chalitza from his wife in order to allow her to get married. I saw two ceremonies of chalitza in my life. It's not a pretty sight, but yeah, these are things that we do. Okay. These are only when the brothers are the brother from the same father. But marrying the wife, the divorcee of your brother, I don't care if it's your brother from the father or brother from the mother, you cannot marry your brother's divorcee, either from your mother or from your father. Okay. Says the Gemara in Yevamis, in source number 5. I'll go directly to the second line. That let's say we have a woman that she was pregnant. She's a non-Jewish woman. She was pregnant when she's non-Jewish. And while she was pregnant, she decided, I want to convert. I want to become Jewish. Hayta horatan shelo bikdusha. She became pregnant when she was non-Jewish. Veleidatan bikdusha. She went to the Beis Din, became a Jew, and she gave birth when she was Jewish. Okay? Says the Gemara, lo cholzim velo me'atmim. These two twins that she had inside of her when she was in the process of Gerus, they're not considered to be brothers of the same father. Why? Because we have this rule, that a convert is a new person entirely. He's disconnected to his previous ancestors. He's something else entirely. So he's not connected to his father. However, when she gives birth, they are considered to be brothers of the same mother. And because of that, they cannot marry the divorcee of each other. Is this clear?
No.
Okay, again. Again. Christina Christensen, she was a non-Jew. She was pregnant with two babies. She has twins.
At the same time.
Twins. Okay. She now went to Beis Din, she became Jewish. And now they gave birth. She gave birth to these two twins. These two boys are considered halachically
as Jews.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Yeah, they are. But they're brothers from the same mother. They're not considered halachically like brothers from the same father. Because from the time of the inception, where they had a father, they had this process of gerus. They're something else entirely. But since she gave birth to them, So at this moment, they are now her children. So the poskim wanted to see from here that if we would have gone according to the inception, so in that case, the same reason that they don't have the same father because of the conversion, so too they don't have the same mother if you go according to the inception. If the mother, the owner of the egg. Actually, here's the same thing. But if the mother, after she went through the process of Gerus, if she was the mother from that moment on, from the moment of inception, so after the conversion, it was supposed to be canceled. They're now reborn. Okay? But no, we say that they're brothers because they were born when she was Jewish. So we see that we go according to the time that she gave birth, and not according to the time of the inception. So again, we see from here, a mother is a mother not from the time of the inception, but from the time she gives birth. Is this clear?
Yes.
Baruch Hashem, it is clear. Very good. Very, very, very clear. Okay, sorry.
Twins, both of them are the same.
Are the same sperm. They're not, so halachically, they're not concerned. Okay, so why? Sorry? Yeah, they're both Ben Avraham. Yeah, but also the convert who's 50 years old is also their same father. Okay, this was proof number 2 why we say that the surrogate mother is the mother and not the mother who gave the egg, because again we see that the mother is determined as a mother not from inception. She's called a mother only from the time that she gives birth. Very interesting. A third piece of evidence, piece of proof, a very original idea that brings that the rabbis bring in order to determine and prove that the surrogate mother is the mother comes from the laws of Orla. The laws of Orla. What are the laws of Orla? If I now plant a tree, so for the first 3 years, I'm not allowed to eat from the fruits of this tree. And now, and when it's 5 years old, I can eat from the fruits of the tree. That is the laws of Ola. What if I take a twig from a brand new tree and put it, and I graft it, I think it's called in English, I graft it to an old tree, and now this twig produces fruit. So the fruit of this twig, is it now 1 year old, or is it 50 years old? I take a twig of a 1 year old tree, grafted it to a 50 year old tree. Now there are fruit. Is this fruit a 1 year old tree, or is it a fruit of a 50 year old tree?
Well, he got it from the 50 year old. So
well, again, but the twig came from a new tree, and he grafted it with an old tree. And that is this fine? It's a bit tough. Okay. I know. Being a dying is not easy. Okay. So again, you're taking the twig of a new tree, grafting it with an old tree. The fruit that comes out, is it a 1 year old fruit or is it a 50 year old fruit?
1 year old.
1 year old says the Gemara that you're wrong. The Gemara says, please forgive me. The Gemara says in source number 8, Yalda shesibcha bizkena, the old twig, the young twig that is now grafted to the old twig, we consider it to be an old tree. As the Gemara says, Betela yalda bizkena, that the new twig is botel, it's cancelled, and it's like nothing as opposed to the roots of this old tree. So the Tzitz Eliezer, Dayan Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, he learned from here, I think, with great, he's very, very original, and very, 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 is a big genius. He says, so if we take this law, and now say the same thing regarding an egg, which is planted inside a different person, so we took the egg from Rachel, this is the twig, the new twig, and we plant it inside Leah, the older tree. So he said that the new twig is bottled to the old tree. So this egg is bottled to this new mother. You take a small thing, so a small egg, and this egg is bottled to the old mother. So he says, as he says it, we see from here that the egg of Rachel, now that it's planted in Leah, it becomes part of Leah, and Leah is the mother. Peggy? Anything?
Just saying, yes, of course, an egg can't become a human being unless it's planted inside her and it can grow into a person.
Yeah. No, so since the halacha said that a twig is bottled to a tree, so the same thing also, the egg is bottled to the mother. Is it the same thing? Are trees the same thing like human beings? Why not? Why not? Well, I don't know. Yeah, that could be a reason. So actually, Arav Yaakov Ariel, in source 11, he was former chief rabbi of Ramat Gan. He wasn't pleased with this analogy because he said it's totally different. The case of the twig that was grafted to the tree. So the twig that was going to be grafted to the tree, and if it's up to me, the twig will be part of this tree forever. We'll never take the twig off of this tree. But in the case of the egg, which is now placed and fertilized inside this mother, I'm waiting for this egg to come out another 9 months as a baby. So as opposed to the twig in the tree, I want it to be there permanently. Here, I want this to be there only for 9 months. So in that case, maybe I don't say it is batal. Does that make sense? It does. אני מבין עברית, יא, עכשיו.
ברגע שאני אמרה, אני
משהו שאני לוקחת
מהביצית
אחרת, אני באמת דבר, אני באמת
דבר,
או שאני לוקחת ביצית שמופרת, יחד עם זה, או של מישהו שמופרת. למה זה אותו ברור? 100% להגיד, זה הביצית שהופרתה, וזה הילד מהביצית הזאת. ולא מהאוסף של הביציות שיש לאישה. הייתי מאוד
טובה גם בעץ. זה שילוב של הרבה דברים שהיו לו בעץ הקודם.
Okay, we'll discuss it at home. Okay. Okay, so we saw, yes, Chaya, right? Yeah.
If there's already a fruit on this tree, sorry, on the branch, when you
wrap
it.
Uh-huh. So if there's already a fruit. So I think, it, very, very interesting question. I'm not sure, but I guess that if it wasn't a full fruit, but only a tiny thing that's not going to grow, I think the halakha will distinguish. So if it was in the size of an egg, for instance, and it comes a full fruit when it's over there, I'm sure the halacha will say it is according to the old tree. That's, I'm sure of it. An egg is tiny. You're right. Whether it's chanita, whether it's then they take it off. So here. That was actually the original proof. He actually discusses if someone transplanted a uterus or transplanted, I don't know, ovaries, I have no idea. Exactly what?
Because I think that the egg transplant is more analogous to if you have a piece, like an apple, and you put it on another tree somehow.
So you're saying that's a tree. I hear. I still think it's different because, again, the egg is tiny. It's microscopic. So halakhically, that will for sure not count as fruit in terms of olah. I'm sure of it. Okay, now I'll give you a few pieces of evidence. To the other side, we saw here three halakhic ideas saying why we hold that the real mother should be the surrogate mother. Now you're going to see the opposite. Why the owner of the egg should be the mother. So actually, I find these Gemara is less compelling, but let's see what do you say? The reason why I find it less compelling is they bring all kind of Gemaros, which are not really halachic Gemaros. They're more of Divrei Agada, homiletics. It's not really halachic Gemaros. But let's see. The Gemara Masechet Nida in source 12 tells us the following. Tanu Rabbanan, very famous. Shlosha shutafim yesh ba'adam. Every human being has three partners that they are the people that actually created him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Aviv v'imo, the Hebishter, the father and the mother. Yeah, these are the three partners of every single human being. Aviv mazriya haloven shemeno atzamot gidim tziponaim. The father, he gives the genetics of the whites in the body. That's according to the Gemara. The teeth, the bones, and the fingernails. Umach sheberosho loven shebayin, the brain, and also the white in the eye. Imo mazrat odem, the mother, she brings the red genetics in him. Shemeno or basar sarot, the skin, the flesh, the hair. Shachor shebayin. V'hakadosh baruch hu noten bo ruach u'neshama u'klaster panim v'riat ayin. Hashem baruch hu gives him the neshama, he gives him the face, he gives him the ability to see, to hear, to talk, and bina v'sechet, also the ability of intelligence. Okay, so the Gemara tells us that we have three partners that give. That they are the partners of a Kaddish, of the person, and they are the people that actually give the genetics. So, Rav Goren, former chief rabbi. So he said that we learn from this Gemara that the mother is the biological mother. If we say that every person has three partners that own him, that created him, and we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we have the father and the mother, and we see that the father brings some kind of genetic material, and also the mother brings some kind of genetic material, and she is considered to be the mother. So we learn from here that the mother who brought the genetics is the mother. The mother who brought the genetic material, the one who's actually bringing the Odim, the Ol, Basar, Sarot, this is the mother. This is the Gemara. Is this compelling? Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, I'm so happy you're impressed. So this verse says that we go according to, so go what wants to say in source 13, we see from here that the genetics count. Whoever brings the genetic material is, in fact, the mother. That is proof number one for Rav Goren. Again, you had to find all kinds of original Gemaras in order to learn from it. Halachos had not written anywhere. Another Gemara, which again is Divrei Agada and homiletic, is a Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin in source 14. And this is actually an idea which is given by a non-Jew. Amalo Antoninus the Rebbe, the famous rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he had a conversation with Antoninus. And they were discussing, Neshama meimatai nitna ba'adam. When is the neshama entering a human being? Mishat pkida or mishat yitzira? From the time of inception, then the neshama comes inside, or mishat yitzira from the time of the creation when the child actually comes to the world. That is a question of Antoninus to Rebbe. Antoninus was a Roman empire, I think he was also, and he asked Rebbe, when does the neshama come? From the time of inception or when the baby is actually born? So says Rebbe, amar lo mishat yitzira, I think from the time that the child is born. But Antoninus replied and said to him, that cannot be. אמר לו, אפשר חתיכה של בשר עומדת שלושה ימים בלא מלח ואינה מסרחת? If you take a piece of meat for 3 days, it has no preservatives. So in that case, won't it smell? For sure, it's going to smell. It will smell? Okay, I believe you. So it's going to smell. So he says, the inception of an egg and sperm is a piece of meat. So in that case, after 3 days, it will be worthless. How does it survive for 9 months? That's what Antoninus says to Rebbe. So he says, it has to be Ela Mishat Pkida. The neshama enters a child when? When there is inception. Amar Rebbe, psh. דבר זה למדי למדני אנטונינוס. This thing I learned from Antoninus. ומקרא מסייעו, אני אבי אז הפסוק, שנאמר ובקתך שמרה רוחי. So he says, we learn from here, from the moment of the inception, the neshama comes. So Poskim wanted to learn from here. If the neshama comes from the moment of the inception, so that this child, this embryo, has value from the moment of inception, so in that case, the mother is the mother from the moment of inception. Okay? Interesting? Okay. They for sure did not know. No, they for sure didn't know. They had no idea that there's a concept of an egg until very, very late. Yeah. Okay. You know what? I think I'm going to skip source 15 and go now to a different discussion. I mean the same discussion, which is absolutely fascinating. And this is why I brought it actually in Sefer Bereishis. The series that I'm giving and the Ketav Halacha Shir is Evan HaEzer topics in Bereishis. And apparently there was a case of a surrogate mother in Sefer Bereishit. So I just want to have here any idea who might the surrogate mother could be. I'm skipping. Oops. No, what do you say? No, what do you say? I heard you, Rachel. Okay, so let's see. So there's a very fascinating piece of evidence from the story of Rachel and Leah. I'm now on page 4 in source 17. The Torah tells us in Parashat Vayetze, Perek Lamed Pasuk Kaf Aleph. The Torah says as follows, that Leah, after having 6 boys for Yaakov Avinu, Achav yalda bat. After that, she gave birth to a daughter. Vatikra et shma Dina. And she called this daughter Dina. Then the Torah tells us that Hashem remembers Rachel, that she also needs a child, and then she has a boy. This boy is called Yosef. Okay. Rashi tells us what happened, that Leah was actually pregnant with a boy. She was pregnant with a boy, and she had this calculation. As we all know, the Yaakov had 4 wives, and he had 12 sons. 6 were from Leah, 2 from Zilpah, 2 from Bilhah, and 2 from Rachel. However, said Leah, if I'm not going to have a 7th son, and Zilpah and Bilhah, the mistresses of Yaakov, have 2, so my sister Rachel, how many boys is she going to have? Only 1. And Yaakov is going to have 12 tribes? This is not fair. I cannot allow it that my sister is going to have only 1 son and will provide only 1 tribe of Israel and not 2 like the other mistresses. So what did she do? Rashi tells us that she had a son. She prayed to Hashem, I wish this son will become a girl. And she prayed and she davened and this son became a girl and then Dina was created. That is according to Rashi. That's also the story in Source 19 in the Gemara. She davened, and the child changed itself from a boy to a girl.
Wow!
Amazing. The Gemara asks, "How is this possible? Because if it's a boy, it's a miracle. How can you pray for miracles?" So apparently, according to the Gemara, and this is biologically not correct. It's a very big question. How is this possible? But according to the Gemara, the gender of the child is determined not immediately, but rather only after 40 days. Because, and it's very interesting because 40 days is a very important term in halacha, that the embryo is considered to be, according to the post schema, maya be'alma. It's not an embryo, it's only water. And it becomes an embryo only after 40 days. Because of that, not halacha lemaisa, but some post schema say that abortion is much easier halachically when it's within the first 6 weeks, because halachically it's not an embryo, it's maya be'alma, it's only water. Okay, that is going to Rashi and the Gemara. Again, Leah davened that this child will turn from a boy to a girl. Interesting. Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says in source 20, I brought here his words in Aramit, but I'll just explain his words. He says, no, it wasn't that she had a boy inside of her and she doubted that this boy will turn himself into a girl. What happened? Hashem did a miracle. She was carrying a boy and Rachel was carrying Dina. She was carrying a girl. And Hashem did a miracle. He swapped this fertilized egg from Leah and put it in Rachel and took the fertilized egg of Rachel and put it in Leah. These are the words of Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. That two sisters, he took the fertilized egg, put it there, took this fertilized egg and put it there. So in that case, according to Targum Yonasan ben Uziel and so Tzitzit Yezel, died in Waldenburg, he says, we see from here, this was the first case that we know of, the first recorded case that we know of a surrogate mother, that Rachel was actually carrying the fertilized egg of Leah, and Leah was carrying the fertilized egg of Rachel. Wow. And who is the mother of Yosef? The mother of Yosef is Rachel. And the mother of Dina is Leah. So although it was fertilized in the other mother, right? Although it was fertilized in the other mother, since she was carrying this child, we see from here that who is the mother? The surrogate mother. Unbelievable. Right? Is this clear to everyone?
Yeah.
Hopefully. Okay. So this is for the story of Dina. But it doesn't end here. One second.
I think it's a bit far-fetched.
It's a bit far-fetched? So this is what's so amazing. That I'm sure for thousands of years, people were reading this. What is he talking about? Taking a fertilized egg from Rachel and putting it in Leah and land to Rachel. And we have many Gemaros that sound very weird, make no sense at all. And you know what? Thousands of years later, it makes sense. Not that makes sense, but we learn from this amazing ideas. I mean, we have here an idea of a surrogate mother. Back in the day, it didn't make any sense at all. After a few years, wait a second, we do see this thing that a mother can give her fertilized egg to somebody else. We do see that. I think this is an amazing thing that proves in a certain sense, Torah B'Shamayim, that you see this far-fetched story, but we actually now use it, halakha maiseh, for a 21st century halakha question. I think this is amazing. It's fine, you can think differently. Okay. That is, according to...
This is what the Yemenite told, that they had so many wives.
Why?
The Yemenites had 5-6 wives each man.
Yeah?
Only thing, when they came into Israel, they stopped
it. I know they stopped it. You're right. Okay, so that is this piece of evidence. So we see from this case, again, the surrogate mother. And who's the mother? Rachel and Leah. So we see that the surrogate mother is the mother. However... there's a very interesting story. In source 23, so we learn about the children, the descendants of Yaakov Avinu. And the Torah tells us about the children of his children. Ubnei Shimon, who are the sons of Shimon? Yimuel, Yamin, Ohad, Yechin, Sochar, Veshaul ben Kna'anit. And he has a son, Shimon, called Shaul, the son of the Kna'anit. Why is he called Ben Kna'anit? What happened? Rashi tells us, that Shimon got married with his sister. He got married with his sister, Dina. And why is she called Kna'anit? Because she was together with Shechem from Kna'an. And when Shimon came and wiped out the town of Shechem, so Dina said, what is it? You're taking away my husband. So Shimon says, don't worry, I'll marry you instead. That's according to Rashi. Again, very, very interesting story. But we see that we learn from these things, very fascinating things. The question is, what is the obvious question? How could Shimon marry his sister? Beyond being Gilu Arayis, so naturally, halachically, we hold that our forefathers observed Torah even before they were commanded. So how did he marry his sister? So it's very interesting that the Tosfot, the Moshe of Skein in Source 25 says, yes, this obvious question, how did Shimon marry his sister? So he says that for the non-Jews, Bnei Noach, halachically, as we all know, non-Jews are also commanded to observe Gilu Arayis and to make sure that they don't intermarry all kinds of things. So he says non-Jews are not allowed to marry their sister from the mother. Sister from the father is fine, but sister from the mother is prohibited. Okay? So he says, the Tosfot, wait a second. is Shimon does Shimon and Dina have the same mother? No, they don't, because Dina was actually created created as an egg where in Rachel, and then she moved to Leah, says Tosfot. So in that case, who is actually the mother of Dina? The owner of the egg, Rachel. She is actually the mother of Dina. So Shimon and Rachel are not siblings from the same mother, says Tosfot. So he goes according to the egg. Does this make any sense? Hopefully, yeah. So he says that since they don't have the same mother, because the mother of Shimon is Leah, and the mother of Dina is not Leah, is Rachel, because she actually was pregnant with Dina. Because of that, we say that they could get married because they don't have the same mother, because the mother is actually the owner of the egg and not the surrogate mother. So this is actually very interesting. Two opposites from the same story of Dina and Rachel and Leah, we have this thing. Amazing. Halacha Maisa, what do we say? We brought a few proofs that seem to determine that the mother is a surrogate mother. We brought a few ideas that seem to prove that the mother is the owner of the egg. So Poskim say, in the last page, in source number 26, the words of Rav Avraham Steinberg, he composed this amazing book called Encyclopedia Refuit Hilchatit. This is a medical halachic encyclopedia. And he says, Le'or ha'uvda she'en hochacha hilchatit le'tzad me'atzadim. Since we have proofs this way, we have evidence that way, we don't really know who is supposed to be the mother. He says, Ne'et ha'gisha, we should do halacha ma'ise, ha'ra'a imahut hilchatit le'chumra. B'shtei hanashim hamitchalkot b'funkciot ha'em b'tzadich ha'afra chuz gufit. He says, we are machmir, that both mothers are the mother. So how does that make any sense? Okay, so he says, that if indeed one of the mothers is non-Jewish, right, either the owner of the egg or the surrogate mother, so we are concerned, maybe he's actually the son of a non-Jew, and he has to now do conversion. So if the mother, the surrogate mother, or the owner of the egg is a non-Jew, we are machmir, and they have to do a conversion to this child. In addition, halacha ma'isa, a person should marry his brothers from the same mother. So if we know who are the mother, who is the owner of the egg, and who is the surrogate mother, this child is allowed to marry both his brother or sister from the owner of the egg, and a brother or sister from the surrogate mother. We're machmir in both directions because of this suffix. But in our case, so how are we now going to determine who's going to have custody? Who's going to actually raise this child? Are you going to do 50-50? Says Chief Rabbi of Israel, Hagoyen, Rav David Lau Shlita, in source 27. So he writes, and he wrote last week, and he says, Noseh ha-yechus is a bit unclear. Noseh ha-yechus she'en pudekeit nudon baruka. Who is the real mother is a very, very, very long discussion between Gedolei Yisrael, and he says in the second paragraph, Emdatihi, my opinion is, sheyesh lirot ba'em hapundekait, the surrogate mother, sheyoledet etavla, that gives birth to this child, ke'em habiologit, that the halachic biological mother is the one who carried the egg, is one who actually delivered, who's actually the surrogate mother. She is the halachic mother. Imken benidon didan, in our case, ha'em hayoled b'shata mutzlachat, hi ha'ima shel habat. So she will raise a child. However, he says in the next paragraph, but again, since this is a suffix, we have to make every single effort that we can to find out who is the real mother, the owner of the egg, and also who is the father. We don't know who the father is in this case, right? You have to know who's the father. In order to know these things, that this child cannot marry his brothers or sisters from this father and from that mother, because we are machmir both directions. But we do hold that it seems that the majority of rabbis and poskim, and again, I find it more compelling their pieces of evidence that they bring from Shas, to say that the surrogate mother is the halachic mother, and because of that, she's going to carry it, raise this child. Yes, you want to say something?
But like, this is for all situations.
So
his answer would be like a normal surrogate.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I gave him, me and my husband,
No. So again, we assume. And if the person gave it, so there was some kind of agreement. And you have to make sure that there was an agreement. And this, this will determine halachically, if the surrogate mother is a non-Jew, we will still hold that this mother, that this child has to have a conversion. So halachic, who is the halachic mother will be that mother. But if you have some kind of agreement, so in that case, this agreement will count. Again, here there's no agreement. Usually, in the usual case of surrogacy, there is an agreement.
Science has something to say on it,
but with all due respect to science, Rabbi said that the Gemara gave more weight not to one egg, rather to 9 months of multiplying this egg into a full child.
Debating that a mother is very important and a mother's genetic material is why. 100%. Taking care of your baby for 9 months is
another job of a mother, and
raising your child is another job. They're all things that make a person a mother. Doing one of those jobs, how does that get biological?
I think this is a very important job, turning this egg into a.
His story guaranteed it will be the feeling of an adopted child who will now say, "I need to search out my biological family, my parents, to know who I am, where I come from, what my family looks like, who my siblings are." Guaranteed,
I agree that what you're saying is very hard. 100%, it's very hard. Emotionally, psychologically, mentally, of course, it's something which is very, very hard. And people will want to track down their biological mothers. But nevertheless,
science, we... Science and the legal law and the way the law works in the world, like, none of that has any input to sources that you come to and say, like, forget it, it's that.
Because this is something also new for the legal system. Who should be considered the mother? We have here an egg. We have here the womb that actually gave birth to this child. So... You could have the same discussion also regarding pizza. I brought flour, eggs, cheese, and some tomato sauce, and now you have the oven. Who actually created this pizza? It's not the oven. Without a proper oven, I don't have pizza. But again, this is much more. But again, this is not simple. It's not pashut, and it's not supposed to be simple. So again, so we will be concerned in the case of Yuchsin, in the case of does he have to have a conversion? Can he marry his brothers and sisters from the owner of the egg? But who will be the more parent? So will be the same mother. Who could decide about the abortion?
Holding of life.
No. Of course it doesn't.
Who considers that to be the start of, like, you could flush it down because it's nothing?
So it's a very nice question your answer. If someone now destroys a fertilized egg, is this a murder? So the halacha says that the halacha is that if, let's say, a couple went to a fertilization clinic, want to bring a child, but now they have, let's say, 5 fertilized eggs. Once they are pregnant with one fertilized egg, the advice is to destroy the remaining fertilized egg in order to avoid any problems. To destroy it. So we see it's much easier to destroy this thing. Let's say it was fertilized for 20 years, and then they put it into the mother. How old is this baby? 20? He's born 20?
It's funny you say that, because my brother, they did in vitro, and it's... His three kids are really triplets, but they were all implanted.
No, but again, I mean, it was their egg and also came back to her.
Right. Yeah. All from the same retriever.
Yeah.
So they're all triplets.
Yeah, 100%. Cool. One last item. Is a surrogate mother...
They didn't grow up together.
One last item, and we'll finish with this. One last item, if you don't mind. One last item. Is it halakhically allowed to actually have a surrogate mother? And going through this process, is this allowed? So Rav Vosner, he was very much against it, because he says that since Rav Vosner held that the mother is not the mother, the owner of the egg, but rather the surrogate mother, and he said in that case, it's terrible, because the entire idea of husband and wife becoming one, he says, is bringing a child to the world. And since this child, actually the mother, is not your companion, but the surrogate mother, so that is, this child is not an expression of the hayun basarichad, of becoming one. So he says, this is in my mind a terrible thing, and you're lacking the great blessing of the Torah of husband and wife becoming one, because becoming one is bringing a child, and since the mother here again is a surrogate mother, you're losing this value. She was very much against it. However, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg, Zechas Lekevracha, passed away a year and a half ago, and he says that there is a big problem, because if it's not supervised, you can have major, major mistakes, like that it was now in a Suta. However, if you go to a clinic that has a Hechsher, in Israel you have today organizations, Machon Pua, Pone Olam, doing amazing things, that has a Hechsher, has supervised, so in the case that they can't bring children in a natural way, so this is halakhically okay, of course, only if it has the proper Hechsher and proper supervision to make sure that these kind of mistakes won't happen. Let's hope that Hashem, and all this is only halacha, not lemaisa. Hashem, by learning these things, so those that actually need children will be zochet to have a zera shekayama, healthy children, very, very quickly. Amen.